again, 10 years ago, I would have needed everything to be perfectly lined up and had a bunch of clients and said, okay, I'm not going to make any decisions until everything is absolutely in order and organized and all looks good. And if I did that, I would have never taken the leap, and then I would have never actually done anything, because things are never perfect.
Hey there. Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey, your fellow student and host. In this episode, I spoke with Aaron Berger, a public relations specialist and entrepreneur focused on the fintech space. Aaron tells his story of getting started in the PR industry, deciding to move to freelancing, and evolving his freelance business into his current PR consultancy with a business partner. You'll also hear him talk about how he approaches his work with founders to craft their narratives and how the PR industry is evolving. Hope you enjoy. Aaron, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the podcast. Really appreciate you joining me.
Thank you. It's great to be here as well. I'm very excited to be a part of this. And congratulations again on the launch and starting the podcast as well.
Thank you so much. Well, excited to talk about all things PR, entrepreneurship. But before we jump into all of that, I would love to come back to your childhood. And I'm curious, just in what ways did creativity come out? And then two, if you think back to that time, were there any early entrepreneurial instincts or exposure?
There really weren't, honestly. And I was thinking back, like, where did I decide to take this risk or kind of have the motivation to take this risk? And my grandfather was a business owner a long time ago. And one of my uncles took over that business and did his own thing here and there. But in my immediate family, my dad was a lawyer. My brother's a lawyer. They work in a big corporate law firm. There was, I think, not an expectation necessarily, but almost this sort of assumption that you go to high school, you go to college, you go to graduate school, and then you are in the workforce. You work for a big organization. So no one told me, oh, you can go out and do your own thing, or you can create this business in the way that you want to. I always felt like you enter into an institution and you work your way up. So the whole entrepreneurial, freelance, start your own business idea definitely came much later in life. And it was not something that I think anyone in my family would have thought I would be the one doing. I think that there's always been a little bit of a desire on my side. I think there was some motivation. And if I look back at, I don't know what those signs would be, but just a feeling of, well, I want to try something new here or try something new there or explore different areas and not always stay on this singular path. And then eventually it just developed and matured into to the point where 5 years ago, I decided to take that leap and to do my own thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because it's also can be, it's a little bit comforting too to know, hey, you don't have to have seen all these signs.
Right, right.
In order to pursue this path, you can right. intentionally make a change.
Right. And just to go back to that, I guess the first real sign, if I'm thinking about it, was my first job. I really wanted to get to New York, and it was the height of the financial crisis. It was back in 2009 when I graduated, and I actually had a job at a lobbying firm down in Washington, D.C., and thought the path was going to be that government. Whether it was working within government, my background was political science, whether it was working for this lobbying company or going back onto the Hill, that sort of seemed to be where things were going. But I didn't really want to stay in Washington, D.C. It's where I spent my whole life. It's where I grew up, and actually ended up meeting somebody who was moving his PR firm from Cleveland to New York City with a partner, starting his own, a different kind of venture with a partner in the back of a cab with my brother going from Baltimore, Washington International to Washington, D.C. And he said, why don't you just come up to New York and work for me for a couple of years? It took the leap and took the risk then. I think my parents probably thought I was a little insane for doing it. But again, it was the first, I guess that was the first big leap, because there was no guarantee that was going to work out. And then, you know.
And that was your leap into PR.
That was my leap into PR, exactly. And I was looking at it and I was starting to understand a lot of the skills that I've learned in college. A lot of the skills that apply to politics and government are very similar to PR in the corporate world. So it was a natural fit. And that's actually how I did get into the industry, which is a strange way to do it.
So that's how you got in. What interested you about the industry that caused you to stay and continue to work in it?
I think the idea that you are really shaping perception of certain, whether it's brands or ideas or, and that's what I said in politics and government, I felt like I was selling ideas, or for the lobbying firm trying to sell their ideas to the Hill. And it's all about just listening, understanding, and then honestly messaging back those ideas in the right way. And so that was something that always appealed to me, was just understanding, how do you take these ideas and then package them in a way that's easily digestible and very, you can understand. And so then the more research I did on, okay, if I've done that here in DC, had an internship in the Senate, had this background, and I want to get to New York, what's the easiest way to do that? And that was, there's this whole industry that sort of does what I've been doing at this lobbying firm, but it's just for businesses and for companies. It's not government affairs. It's public relations and all the different things that come with that. So that's why it interested me. And I think why I've stayed in it, because fundamentally, I actually enjoy the ideas behind it and what you're trying to accomplish. And that always changes, right? Like the tools that you have at your disposal, the channels, that is constantly changing. But fundamentally, it's about building consensus or finding the right way to sell is the wrong word, but to bring attention to whether it's a product or an idea or a founder. It can be any of these areas. And how do you do that in the right way that people are going to latch on to?
Yeah. Wow. Really interesting. So 5 years ago, you mentioned, okay, you started to go out on your own. So how did that come about?
Starting in the back of the cab, let's start there. Found my way into one of the larger firms, Ketchum, through a variety of just connections and networking after a few years in New York. And at Ketchum, was working for a variety of different very large companies at that agency. And one of them was IBM. IBM ended up deciding to bring me in-house, given the work that I was doing at the agency. And while I was in-house, was really working across business units. Again, very similar to what I was doing at the beginning. It was talking to executives, talking to other professionals, trying to figure out what the best stories were across whether it was AI or blockchain or other areas. And again, I think there was always a little part of me that wanted to try doing something on my own. And I looked at it as I could keep doing this for IBM in a big company, or I could take what I'm doing here. There's multiple different businesses. There's a lot of diversity in the types of things I'm focused on, and finally take the leap and see what happens. At the same time, I think that what made it the right time as well is that there's just so much shifting going on within media, within how work was being done, with, obviously it sounds crazy, but like with the internet, there was just a lot that you could do on your own. And there, with software as a service and the tools that were available, it felt like now's the right time. I also didn't have a daughter at that point. There was a lot less kind of keeping me at a certain place. So it was this mix of, I felt like I had the expertise and had the idea with just the right time. And I had this thesis going out that as more of our generations grew up within the workforce, there would be this realization that things would become more and more distributed. And if I could position myself as more of an expert or a specialist within media and media relations and executive visibility, there would still be opportunity for me, even though it would be a little bit scary. So it was a calculated leap at the end of the day. And that was why I just felt like now's the time to try this. And I always felt like I could always go back if it didn't work. But I think the biggest pull was, honestly, I was like, well, in 10 years, if I look back and I didn't try this, would I have regret that I didn't do it? And I was like, I think I would. So I'll give it a couple years and see what happens and see where this all heads. But I didn't think like I'm going to go out and build some giant PR agency or build some giant. I didn't do it for any of those reasons. It was really just, I wanted to see if I could do it.
I love that. And I think Can you talk a little bit about, because as an independent firm, you have the ability to evolve and change, whereas some of these bigger companies don't. So I'm curious, like, what changes you've made in response to how much the industry's changed, and a little bit about how much the industry's changed.
Yeah. So when I took that initial leap, I felt as though some of these larger entities, given how fast media changes and how fast information is really shared over everything. I mean, the proliferation of channels is extreme right now, and things move really fast. Before, you had a news cycle that was a week or could be a month, and now it's, you have 24 hours basically, or even less. And it just sort of felt like some of the larger consolidated firms just were not moving all that fast. But it didn't feel as though that was going to occur for, there was still lots of contracts, people were still using them, and I totally understood the reasons behind all of that. But it felt like maybe in 10 years, like suddenly there's this shift happening. And then the pandemic happened. And I think that really accelerated this sort of shift to specialists, let's call it. And a lot of people realized why, I mean, even companies realized, why do I need all these people in a big office and have this consolidated full service thing when I could either hire in-house or bring in specialists that can do the work and be more nimble. And I definitely saw a shift in that, I think, over that first year of the pandemic. And when it happened, I was nervous. I was like, oh my God, what is going to happen here? I was even freelancing for an agency that furloughed me because they were like, you're a freelancer, we need to take care of our people, which I was like, totally get it, not insulted at all. But I was like, what in the world is going to happen here? And then suddenly, I would say business actually accelerated. I was getting more calls saying, can you help with this or can you help with that? Because everything just suddenly became so much more distributed than it was in the past. And I think that is something that is continuing. I don't think it's completely done yet. And figuring out how to position myself in the right way, given, and also how to differentiate yourself, is what I constantly am thinking about. At the same time, as mentioned, the media landscape has just changed massively. Even from when I started, it was still print. Still, when I started, it was the BuzzFeed, Gawker, Vice era that is now no longer there. And that was what I grew up in and really cut my teeth on. But there's just a constant landscape shift, it feels. And honestly, unfortunately, more and more outlets are starting to go under. So having to figure out strategies and new channels and stay on top of all of that really every single day is something that I think does continue to differentiate what I've been doing. And then just staying honest and staying ethical, I think, is also a very important part of all of this, because at the end of the day, it's you. And if you lose that, like, that's the end, right? Like, even if you make a mistake, as long as you're honest and ethical about it, I found that is definitely the biggest, a huge component of this whole business.
Yeah, it feels like everything is becoming so much more bifurcated and so much more niche as these major news outlets are less and less. The one story is no longer.
Right, exactly. And it makes the job more difficult, because how do you stand out, for sure? And there are less outlets. There's less sort of channels. I mean, they're, at least with traditional media, there are more channels than ever to tell your story, but to have it noticed and rise above the noise is what always makes it more difficult. And I think that is also something that I've definitely noticed, is as media has shifted, it's always been important to know who your audience is, but that is becoming even more essential, because that is the fundamental foundation of everything now. It's, who are we really targeting? Who do we really want to speak to? Because there aren't, with this sort of, as you mentioned, bifurcation and the sort of distribution of everybody and not a singular gathering place, there are still places that people go to get their news, and there are still places people go to get information. And that's what you really have to think about more than anything now, not just getting your story in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal at the end of the day. That's a component of the strategy, of course, but there are people who are not reading those that are reading somebody's Substack at the end of the day? And how do you mesh that in your strategy? And making sure that you have all of those different bases covered at the end of the day is, I think, only becoming more and more important.
When you work with founders and businesses, what does that process look like? How do you help founders shape their narrative, think about, to your point, who their target audience is, and then work to place the stories appropriately or craft the narrative?
Yes. So I work very closely and try to work hand in hand with the founder or whoever their head of marketing, head of PR is. And typically when I get brought in, it's at a seed, series A, series B level. It's somebody who's just starting to think about PR. What I often find is they have sold at that point and are very good at selling to investors, but selling externally and selling an idea to investors is a very different aspect. So I'll sit down with the founder and really talk through, okay, what is the story that you're trying to tell? And also, who are you trying to reach? And I always ask them at the very beginning, because it's the question that they're going to get from journalists at the beginning of any interview, is tell me about your company. And sometimes that is a very hard question for people to actually answer, to get to the fundamental nature of what a company does and what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. So there's often a narrative strategy that's associated with that. And then we figure out where are the moments in time that we can amplify who they are. We pull together the messages that we want to make sure that they can convey in a concise manner. And we figure out, and then we put together, okay, what are the channels that we can use to get in front of people and to raise your visibility? Some of this also was very dependent on what stage these companies are in, right? If they're some company that hasn't had a lot of visibility, the kind of exercises, let's just figure out how to get you visibility. If they have visibility, it can be, okay, how do we help get you sales? What is your sales strategy? How do we grow users? How do we grow customers? And that can be a very different strategy from an external relations perspective. And then the bigger ones, it turns into visibility a little bit again. It's an interesting kind of chart if I look at it. It starts at visibility and then it becomes sales and then it becomes visibility again. And making sure that from a press standpoint, you were being talked about and written about in the right way. And that is a different sort of strategy than just pure visibility or pure sales enablement. Making sure that you're being written about the right way is always important. But actually, sometimes the larger companies who are always being paid attention to, that can be in a lot of ways the most difficult process, because it's how are we really going out to market when you're always going to be paid attention to in a way that's conveying and positioning you in the right way amongst a much larger audience at that point. So again, it all fundamentally comes down to who are you trying to reach and how, and working with founders to understand what their goals are, what their motivations are, and then how are they, can they best convey that through their communications directly, and then the channels that they can utilize and leverage is really the key.
That's such a fascinating process. And I think founders and CEOs, you would think that they know what their business is, but often trying to describe it or trying to create the story yourself for anything really that's personal, yeah, I think is, yeah, exceptionally challenging and does require that second set of ears, really.
Right. And I understand, because if you're a founder, you're so focused on making this thing successful and why it be successful. And there's so many different components of that, but how the company may be perceived externally versus how you're perceiving it can be, it may not align necessarily, or there may be work that needs to be done because what is happening externally in the world and what you're trying to do, how do you marry those two together? And sometimes it's really easy and sometimes it can be a really painful process. And I've been through all of it. So it's always interesting to see. But then when it works, it is sometimes a little magical. Right. Because at the end of the day, when I'm working with founders and I'm working with executives, it's not like you're paying for advertising, right? If you go out there and you spend a certain amount of money and you create the graphics and you have the other things that you need that you're going to get into an outlet or a publication. But when you have put the time and effort in to come up with the story that you want to tell, and then you see it resonating and people sharing it and people talking about it, it's not as though, and I think this is what is sometimes really hard about PR, it's not like anyone had to do that at the end of the day. It's not like anyone had to talk about this or had to write the story about it. Yes, relationships matter, but it's also, even with relationships, if the story's bad or the news is bad, people aren't going to write about it. So every time there's, whether it's a funding announcement or a product announcement or just somebody's general thinking about an industry, whenever somebody says, oh, this is interesting, let's do it, it always feels a little bit magical at the end of the day.
Well, it is actually very similar to a lot of other forms of creativity where you're putting things out there. You don't know exactly what's going to stick or what's going to resonate and how it's going to resonate with people.
And it's weird, right? Because like that, there is also failure. And I think that's something when I first got into this, had to accept. And I think that's actually been one of the hardest things when I tell people, like, oh, if you're going to jump into this world, like, there's also a lot of failure that takes place. Like, you see the stuff in PR that obviously people are writing about, but you don't see the stuff that isn't resonating because no one's writing about it. So it's one of those things where not everything is going to work, and you do your best given the relationships you have and the expertise that you have to make things stick. But that doesn't mean everything is going to actually work. I had a person at IBM who would always say, when you pitch, if you're hitting 300, you're in the Hall of Fame. And that was what the mentality that he would have with PR was. 7 out of 10 things, if that's rejected, you're still getting 3 different hits. And that's pretty good for this industry at the end of the day. So
what are some of the mistakes that you see founders and businesses make in PR?
The 2 biggest mistakes I see is, well, one with co-founders, not having, whether it's a technical co-founder, not being on the same page on the messaging. Ultimately, if there are 2 founders externally, people are going to want to talk to both of them. And if they aren't on the same page with what the company does or with the messaging around that company and it's misaligned, it's going to lead to problems down the road, no matter what. And I have seen that on a few different occasions. And then I think the other mistake is how long PR takes. It is especially with early stage founders. If a founder has raised a whole bunch of money, I think sometimes there's the expectations everybody should care about me. And the truth is, investors can care about you, but that doesn't mean publicly people are going to care about you. And so you have to give a reason why the general public audience, buyer, whoever you're targeting, should care about you. Because ultimately that investment is for you to, of course, build your company. But how you do that is externally can be very different for each one. And so I usually like to say, if we see success off the bat, like, that's great. But to really start seeing momentum as an earlier stage company, it's going to take at least 3 months, likely 6 months. And then hopefully by a year, we have an engine going where people are starting to know you. And then that same level of expectation of, well, why aren't we in the Wall Street Journal? Why aren't we in the New York Times immediately? There are ways to go about that. There are things that they may cover that are part of Wall Street Journal VC Pro, if you have a funding announcement, something like that. But to get a big feature, that can take a year. And it can take a lot of work behind the scenes. And I think that a lack of understanding sometimes of how much work does go behind the scenes to just get to the point where you're getting one story published can be, and that sort of impatience can be a mistake I often see. So I think that's one, that's another one. And I think as part of that is take the time to actually figure out the story. Don't think just because you've raised a bunch of money. Yes, it helps to raise a bunch of money to get people to care about you, but it's not the only thing that is going to get people to care about you. And I actually have seen a kind of a shift in that, especially recently. I think in 2021, 2022, I do a lot of work with fintechs, and I think there was this boom. And so there was a lot about, oh, how much money are people raising? And that's a story. And now it's much more about, what's the product market fit? And how does this really fit within the broader market and that people are interested in? People are always going to be interested in the market in general, but that sort of, okay, what is the product differentiator and what is it really solving here is more of where the story is versus just the ongoing raising and growth and everything else. The growth story is still important, but it's not what it was 2 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, which is refreshing because we want to hear about the actual products and services.
Exactly. And I think there is a little more doubt amongst media and the news cycle that, okay, we need a little bit more here than just a big raise or something like that. What is the actual differentiator here? And I think that's becoming more important and continues to become more important.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear you talk about the and sometimes misalignment between co-founders. And I think that the act of actually pulling your story together can be so challenging. People think it's so straightforward and simple, but to actually come up with what is the story? How do we articulate this in a way that resonates with people? And there's emotions behind it.
And I think that's where it becomes really fascinating is once emotions get involved, and they do get involved. There's no way if you're the co-founder of a company for it not to get involved. What does that look like and what does that mean? And how do you start to separate your emotions from communications at the end of the day and your product and selling that product? And it's not always easy. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to be emotional or to be invested and have passion about something, but there's also a level of what is the end goal here and what's the best way to accomplish it. And I think I mentioned when I go through this narrative and messaging process, especially with co-founders, there's often that conversation of tell me what your company does. More times than not, they're not saying the same thing. So I think that's really why I always say it's important to go through that narrative and messaging process at the end of the day, unless they've already done that. And it's possible that they've already done that. Sometimes I get brought in after they've done that. And then it's more just refining and practicing and testing and making sure it is resonating. And if we need to change it, we do. But overall, having that is the kind of the fundamental basis for all communications efforts is still very important.
I'm curious, as you have started now your own firm in the last 5 years and going at it from the perspective of your own company, what is it like to turn the tables and build your own story and narrative and branding?
It's funny. So I recently partnered as well, which we can get into in a second. So for 5 years, it was just me as ASB Strategies, recently rebranded to AM Partners, working very closely with Mike Sinclair. But yeah, I think it's funny because I'm in this business and I'm terrible at self-promotion. All the things that I've told people to do, I just did not. But part of, I think that is because I always tell people it's not my job to get the press at the end of the day. It's my job to stay behind the scenes and get you the press at the end of the day. And I think that kind of telling that story and it becomes leaving a little bit of mystery. And like I said, keeping some of this, the magic there, so to speak, if I'm behind the scenes, that actually helps. So yeah, weaving that story into it, it's hard to explain because I do so little, or I have been doing so little self-promotion over the last 5 years. It's all been referrals. It's all been talking to people. It's all relationships. But I do try to maintain, and no matter how big or small a company is, try to give the same level of service to that company, no matter what. It's not always the easiest, but ultimately for me to build this business and for me to grow it, the reputation is what matters more than anything. And it's not what my reputation is externally, it's what it is to the clients. And ultimately, that's been what's working for me. So having gone out on my own, I didn't really know what was going to happen when I took the leap. And then once I posted on LinkedIn, I didn't even have a website at that point. I was, oh, I'll just get that done. I'll spend the first month building up all the marketing materials I needed. And I just never really needed it. So eventually I had a website, had all the other things just so people could find it and make sure that I was legitimate. But ultimately, yeah, it was just word of mouth and relationships. And then the other thing I would say is just trying stuff, especially the first 2 years. I think I was doing working for different types of companies, working for different types of industries, trying to figure out what my niche was for those first 1 or 2 years, making lots of mistakes. All of the different things people say happen when you take the leap were 100% true. And it's just the nature of how it's going to go. But overall, I think that kind of having the ability to, again, stay honest, not everything's going to work, have some mm-hmm. sort of understanding that things are going to work, things are not going to work, when things are not working, have those conversations as early as you can. When things are working, then it's all great. But maintaining those relationships and being honest in those relationships is definitely, I think, the thing that's most important in this industry, period.
So you mentioned you recently partnered. What is it like to be with a partner versus going at it fully alone?
So first of all, I'll say it's different. It definitely is different because it's no longer just you, right? And I think that is definitely, suddenly you are working hand in hand with somebody who it's both helpful, but they have different ways of working and they have different ways of going about things. And you want to make sure we are very complementary in how we both work. She's a bit more detail oriented than me, which is good. And she makes sure that everything is running smoothly and that she did this at Meta for many years and built teams. And that's something I never really did. I never really built teams or put processes in place. I'm a little more, let's try stuff and see how things go and see if things work. And she is too, but it's definitely, we both have our those positives, but she has built teams and she knows how to do all of these other things that I just never really did. And I think bringing somebody in who can complement you as a freelancer is really important. I always knew I wanted to partner with somebody. It just, I was very careful about finding the right person. And I think part of that, honestly, is maybe because I've worked with so many founders and co-founders, I've seen just how important who you surround yourself with is. And I wanted to make sure that if I did bring on a partner, it was a really good fit at the end of the day. And this has been a great fit. And we also trialed it, right? We worked on certain clients together before formalizing everything and making sure that our styles did complement each other. But it is definitely a different feeling that if something doesn't work out or there's a change in revenue, it's not just for you anymore. It's you and your partner. And that is a definite shift in mentality to say, okay, now it's not just my responsibility. It's ultimately the responsibility of a small, I don't know if organization is the right word, but a small organization would be. But again, we communicate, we work really well together. We make sure that decisions are made in tandem with each other. And we, so far, so good. I mean, it's only been, I guess, 2 months since we officially launched. But again, we've been working together for many more months than that. And it's been really great. One thing that I do want to add to that I should just mention is it's really nice to have somebody else to bounce ideas off of.
That's so important.
I think that one of the things is if you're by yourself, and one of the things that I learned is you're going to have weeks that are good and you're going to have weeks that are just like pretty brutal. And you're going to not have anyone who you can say, is this normal? Is this not normal? Is this what should be happening? And you don't know. No one, there's no playbook. And so having somebody who you can just both bounce ideas off of, if something does happen, just say like, how are we going to handle this? It's a huge reason why having a partner is very beneficial, if only for the collaboration aspect of it. And it's something that I think I actually have really missed.
It's so important. And why did you decide to partner right now?
So what was interesting about the last year, and we talked about how things are always changing and how things are shifting, is with some of the downturn in 2023, a lot of companies were laying off very good communications people. And what's been interesting is a lot of them have gone out, started their own things, started to freelance, started to do exactly what I did. And I think that's incredible. I think the more people who are out there, the better. But it also allowed me to take a look at, well, maybe now's the time to do something a little different. This sort of distribution that I thought was going to happen, the specialization, the sudden influx of this generation who's going through this first wave of layoffs is leading to a whole new amazing class of entrepreneurs who are starting to do what I was doing 5 years ago. And again, I think some will love it, some will hate it, some will want to go back into the in-house world, some may go to agencies, but suddenly there's this incredible amount of talent out there. And so I just started working with a variety of different people who, particularly for Meta, were laid off, and they were some of the best communications professionals I had ever met or ever started to work with. And so I had been looking for a partner for a couple years, but no one had really meshed in the right way, and was actually put in touch with Meg by a former freelancer after she went in-house. And she said, there's this person out there, you should really meet her. I think you'd work great together. You have very complementary skills. And so it felt like after 4 years, I was even being like, how much longer can I just do this by myself? It felt like things were getting a little bit redundant each year. I wasn't sure how to keep on growing or what that would look like. And so serendipitously, I think both this amount of talent that was suddenly out there combined with just wanting to continue to evolve and grow. And I think that's something that I actually didn't realize was going to happen. You always want to evolve. And I never really thought I would get to 4 years, honestly. But then once that happened, it was, what is that next step? And being able to find somebody who did complement my skills so well, who had the same vision for where this industry was going to go, and then be able to immediately take that next step with somebody who I felt I could trust and was very senior and had a lot of other experiences, but more in-house versus agency, it just made sense. And it worked really well, and it has continued to work very well. So knock on wood, it'll be another 5 years or longer. And again, we don't know, as mentioned, we don't know where it's all going to go. We'll talk about what it looks like and what we want it to do and how big we want it to get and all of those other items. But, you know, right now it's just nice to have somebody to partner with, bounce ideas off of, and create same work, but different kind of organization at the end of the day.
Yeah, it really is such a gift, because I think that's one thing people tend to be reluctant on in going at this alone or being an entrepreneur, is it's quite lonely, right? And you don't have that person to brainstorm and collaborate with.
Exactly.
So to wrap up, I want to ask one last question, which is, what do you feel that you've learned about yourself in this process?
I think the thing that I have learned about myself, and again, I don't know if it's about myself or just more in general, is that things don't have to be perfect for you to give them a try. I think, again, 10 years ago, I would have needed everything to be perfectly lined up and had a bunch of clients and said, okay, I'm not going to make any decisions until everything is absolutely in order and organized and all looks good. And if I did that, I would have never taken the leap, and then I would have never actually done anything, because things are never perfect, especially when you're on your own or in a partnership. And honestly, some of the job is trying to just make things better. And especially in the PR industry, right? Like, again, it's not as though you're going to have everything under control. Like, you can't. You are not going to always have control, because it's ultimately, in a lot of ways, a relationship-oriented business. And so things are going to work and things are not going to work. And if you just focus on the things that aren't going to work, you're going to be just demoralized all the time. So I think give things a try. And if you like it, and if you don't, you can always go back and do the other thing that was working better. And again, I also know how fortunate I was to be able to take that leap. And there are lots of people who can't do that type of stuff. But I do think that so much of this has just been about learning what's worked and what hasn't worked, that waiting for perfection it would be a fool's errand at the end of the day.
Wow. That's a great learning for really any creative endeavor. So thank you.
No problem.
One that I have to constantly remind myself of. So I'm sure others as well.
I do too. It doesn't ever stop, right? You just keep working at it at the end of the day. So sometimes it's just about continuing to move forward. And I think that if you could just at the end of the week say, I moved a few things forward and not everything was perfect, but ultimately it was more pros than cons, then that's what really matters at the end of the day.
That's a win. How can people get in touch with you to work with you?
Yeah. So probably the best way, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find Aaron Berger. You can also reach out to me at aaron@am.partners. That's the new email with the new partnership. Or you can go to our website, which is just www.am.partners. And, you know, learn more about what we do, how we work, past clients, and yeah, always happy to just have a conversation at the end of the day. So feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It is very appreciated.
Hope you enjoyed my episode with Aaron Berger. Let me know what you thought of it and what lessons you took away.
by leaving a comment on the Lessons in Creativity Instagram page. Thanks so much, and stay tuned for more lessons.